up to the small Shman, the introduction before the prayer, page 16. And the reason we say the Shema here, even though we're going to read it, it's central to the prayer. And there we're going to say it properly with the two blessings before the Shema and the blessing after. You know, the Torah obligates us to say Shema twice every day, in the morning and the evening. We end up saying it four times here in the introduction, and then in the prayer, in the body of the prayer, in the evening, the body of the evening prayer, and then right before we go to sleep. The reason we say it here is two reasons. Firstly, I think it was the 5th century, the Persian king, who was a Zoroastrian, who believed in the two forces of darkness and light, the two gods, made decrees against the Jewish people, who were monotheistic, and forbade them from reading the Shema, which affirms our belief in monotheism in one God. The same God who creates light, creates darkness. There's only one God, and therefore they didn't allow them to include it in the prayers. So they would say it before the prayers. That's why we continue saying it till today. Also, many times the prayer, you may pass the time, the proper time to read the Shema. The proper time to read the Shema is you have to read it in the first quarter of the day. Today is a 12-hour day, so you have to divide it. So the first quarter is 3 hours into the day. And obviously, if it's a winter day, so you have much shorter hours. So every hour, if you have 8 hours of daylight, divide into 12. So a third of that, it's only three much shorter hours. And in the summer, you have 18-hour days. Yeah, but the day starts early also. You can very easily surpass the time when you're allowed to read the Shema. So just in case, we read the Shema earlier, and you have in mind, if you're going to read the Shema the proper time when you daven, you're going to daven in the proper time, then you'll fulfill your obligation when you read the Shema then. But if not, you already read the Shema and you fulfilled your obligation. So that's why we say the Shema, we say the Baruch Shem in the first paragraph. We're not going to get totally into the Shema, because this is not the place for the Shema. The real place for the Shema is when we come to the davening, and there we read the entire Shema, all three paragraphs. But here, and now this fits in with everything that we've been reading till now. We started out with the Akedah, and then that we are nothing, and all those around us, their life has no meaning and purpose, but we are the children. We have our whole claim to fame is that we have a holy neshama, and we are the children of Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. And therefore, as we learned last time, how fortunate are we? We inherited this, we are billionaires, we inherited this tremendous wealth, which is our faith, our Jewish faith. And therefore, we proclaim our Jewish faith, Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. And when a Jew says Shema Yisrael, and that's the main reason why we say it here, what we're saying is that a Jew has to envision that we are ready to sacrifice our life for Hashem. Hashem is so real to us that we're ready to die for Hashem. We're ready to make the ultimate sacrifice. As much as we love life, to us, our connection with Hashem, that is life. And to be disconnected from Hashem is simply not an option. Because the moment we become disconnected from Hashem, we're already dead. So I'm not sacrificing my life. If I sin, I'm dead. If I do the right thing, then I'm alive. It's simply not an option. And this is the holy neshama. This is what we inherit from our patriarchs. And the ultimate expression of that self-sacrifice, Jewish self-sacrifice, was the Akedah. That's where we read the Akedah. That willingness to sacrifice ourselves for Hashem, the total egolessness, which explains how we can inherit, how can we inherit our Jewishness. Logically, it makes no sense. How do you inherit your Jewishness? L'havdil alef havdalos, the Christians today are not the biological children of the original Christians. You can't inherit religion. Just like you don't necessarily inherit art or music, or your parent could have been a brilliant musician and can skip a generation or two or three. Talent, you don't necessarily inherit talent. Just because Avram was pious and religious and he had a love affair with Hashem, how does that mean that automatically all of his biological children to the end of time, all Jewish, have that same relationship to Hashem? Some are more religious than others. Some are more pious than others. Some are more sensitive than others. I mean, how could you inherit religion? And the answer is because Judaism is deeper than religion. You can't inherit religion. But the patriarchs, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, they were like chariots. They were completely egoless. In other words, their relationship to God touched their core, their essence. Their whole being, every fiber of their being, every bone in their body was totally connected with Hashem 24/7. It permeated their whole being, their whole consciousness was the reality of Hashem. And the ultimate, the peak expression of that was the Akedah, both from Avraham and Yitzchak. The total selflessness, as we discuss in the Akedah, myprayerclass.com. That everything, the total self-sacrifice, the total, their whole being was Hashem. There's no other reality of Hashem other than Hashem. Therefore, just like our humanity, a human being will never give birth to a monkey. You can give birth to someone who behaves like a monkey, or maybe puts a monkey to shame because he's so out of control that even the wildest animal would never behave that way. But by law, you'll never give birth to a monkey, to an animal. Why? Because being human, that's your essence. It's not conditional. It's not external. That's who you are. So you can only transmit what you are. You can't transmit what you are. Religion is not your core. It's not your essence. It could be important, very important, extremely important, but it's a part of you. Judaism is not religion. Judaism is not compartmentalized. Our Judaism is not a part of us, an important part, an extremely important part. You're ultra-Orthodox, pious, 90% religious, 95% religious. Judaism is not percentages, it's not religion, it's not important. Judaism is our core, it's our essence. If you're born to a Jewish mother, you're 100% Jewish. Or if you convert halachically, you're 100% Jewish. You have a Jewish soul. That's your core, that's your essence. This is we inherit. You can't help it, it's inevitable. It doesn't matter, you grew up religious, didn't grow up religious. If you are, your mother's Jewish and her mother was Jewish, and her mother was Jewish, going all the way back to Sarah, Rivka, Recha, Rachel, and Leah, you're a descendant of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, you're Jewish. You have a Jewish neshama. You have that Jewish faith. What is that Jewish faith? The Jewish faith is expressed in the Akedah, that your essence is Hashem. That's your reality. There is no other reality but Hashem. That's your life. That's your whole being. And that's what we pointed out in the previous prayer. That all the nations of the world are pursuing power and fame and whatever they're pursuing. But ultimately, it's nothing. It comes from an inherent sense of nihilism, worthlessness. And therefore, you have this urgent need to obliterate yourself. A sense of desperation, a sense of inner angst. Versus a Jew, we have a neshama, we have a faith. We are grounded. What is the source of our confidence? What is the source of our identity? We are grounded in the reality of Hashem. There is no other reality. And therefore, no matter what's thrown at us, even though we're subjugated and persecuted, and they don't even let us read the Shema, they don't even let us practice our religion, nothing, we're insuppressible. Nothing is going to stop us because what we have on the inside, we have that neshama, that holy neshama. We have that faith. We have that inheritance. We're billionaires. We're trillionaires. It doesn't matter what's happening around us externally. They're trying to crush us and oppress us. There's a Hitler and there's a Stalin and there's... It doesn't touch us in the least bit. That feeling of Jewish pride and what we cherish, that we have on the inside, and that's our marriage and relationship with Hashem. That's what gives us our confidence. That's our raison d'etre. That's the purpose of our life. That's the meaning of our life. That's what life is all about. So we're not busy trying, the Jewish people are not busy trying to obliterate themselves and self-destruct, self-destructive behavior, addictions. We live our life, we celebrate life. We celebrate, we're thanking Hashem, we're joyful. We who suffer more than all of the nations of the world combined. And yet we're busy celebrating and rejoicing and thanking Hashem. We can't thank Hashem enough for this inheritance, for this wealth that we inherit. And that's expressed in the ultimate affirmation of Jewish faith. Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu. That's our declaration. That's who we are. That's our mission statement. That's who we are. That's our reality. That's our truth. And therefore we love Hashem with all our heart. B'chol nafshecha, Hashem is one. There's no other reality but Hashem. And baruch shem, Hashem should be blessed. Blessed means it should be an abundance. It should be an abundance of revelation. Shame, to publicize. Hashem should become famous. Kavod malchusa, his honor, his glory, his kingdom, l'olam vod, forever and ever, instead of the world being olam, which comes from the Hebrew word helem, hidden. Instead of Hashem being hidden and concealed, instead of the chaos and the confusion that we have today, it should all be replaced by l'olam vod, with the revelation, and if Hashem becoming famous and publicized, and everyone is aware of Hashem forever and ever. Olam meaning eternally, that the eternity of Hashem becomes revealed in this world. And how do we express that? By loving, v'ahavta Hashem Elokecha, we love Hashem b'chol levavcha, with all our heart. We love Hashem and we do the mitzvahs. Love is just not an end in itself. We love Hashem in order to do the mitzvahs b'chol levavcha, to live our Judaism. We live our Judaism and we live it with all our heart, with both hearts, b'chol nafshecha, with every fiber of our being, with all our soul, with all our faculties, that all our abilities Hashem gave us, b'chol meidecha, and with all our wealth. And no matter what happens to us, good, we go through good times, or we go through challenging times, we love Hashem. And b'chol nafshecha, we're ready to give up our lives for Hashem. If we have to make the ultimate sacrifice, we're ready to make the ultimate sacrifice. Rabbi Akiva. When Rabbi Akiva, one of the 10 martyrs, so they were about to skin him to death, and he was smiling. And the Roman asked, how could you be smiling at a time like this? Are you insane? You went insane? I mean, we're torturing you to death. He says, all my life, I read the Shema, and I said, I love Hashem with all my heart and all my soul, and now this is the time, this is the test, this is the time. All my life I was hoping, waiting, when can I have the opportunity to show my love for Hashem, my dedication for Hashem, that I'm ready to give up my life for Hashem. That's how much I love Hashem. And now I have the opportunity for the first time in my life to fulfill this mitzvah, to love Hashem with all your heart and all your soul. I shouldn't smile, I shouldn't laugh. And therefore all these words, the words of Torah that I'm commanding you, should be on your heart, and the words of the Shema. And Mishinantam Levanecha, teach it to your children. How about now?
That's good.
Okay. Vishinantam levanecha. Vishinantam means it should be sharp. Torah has to be sharp. When you have a question, you have to have the answer. The answer, you have to understand it clearly, crystal clear. When you learn Torah, it has to be crystal clear. You should be able to answer sharply, to the point. That means you truly understand it. Teach it to your children. In a broader sense, also your students. Your main speech should be in Torah. Torah is something that we live with. Torah is what occupies us. Because it's that, it's our intellect, our ego mind, our ego rational consciousness, which fuels that sense of ego and separation from Hashem, which actually fuels that existential angst and that sense of desperation and worthlessness and inner anxiety and unrest, which leads to self-destructive behavior, obliterating yourself, a whole nihilistic approach to life, live for the moment, nothing matters, just have fun, life is meaningless and purposeless. You want to choose to be a donkey, whatever you like, whatever, no restraints, a life of zero restraints, a life of absolutely no higher purpose, no higher end, just for yourself, selfish, self-centered, self-absorbed, arrogance to an extreme, ego to an extreme. Instead, a Jew uses his mind, his ego conscious, his rational ego mind is totally absorbed in Torah. Not only we do the mitzvot, but our mind is engaged in understanding how we do the mitzvot. We don't just read the Shema, we study the Shema. The opening of the oral Torah is Me'emes HaKeren HaShema, all the laws. We study, we learn, we understand. It's our mind is fully engaged in Hashem. There's no separation. There's no existential angst. We're completely unified with Hashem, Hashem Echad. Our whole life, our whole being, day and night, we're unified with Hashem. Our mind is engaged in the wisdom of Hashem and the will of Hashem. So we are busy and fully engaged 24/7. This is our life. This is what we live for. We live to connect with Hashem. This is our life. We're like a fish in water. We're swallowed up. This is our life. Torah for us, Judaism for us is life. It's not religion. It's not duties, obligations. It's life itself. It's sustaining. This is mechol levavcha with all your heart, mechol nafshecha with your soul, mechol meidecha, everything that we have, including all our financial means, whatever we have, we devote and dedicate to Hashem. And our mind is engaged with the bar tabam in the words of Torah. And you should speak b'shivtcha b'visecha while you're at home, b'lechtcha b'derech while you're traveling. And when you go to sleep, that's the commandment to study Torah specifically and to read the Shema. When you go to sleep, that's the time to read the Shema. When people go to sleep, or when people are sleeping. When people wake up, which is up until even the laziest bum, like 3 hours into the morning, he's up. So that's the time the kings would wake up, you know. People of luxury, what do they call them?
Trust fund babies.
So yeah, so okay, by 3 hours into the day, you have to wake up, you know. Everyone else is up at dawn, you know, they were busy working. So when people wake up, that's when you have to read the Shema. You should tie it as a sign on your hand. We actually take the words of Torah and tie it to our hand. It should be a reminder between your eyes. So we commit our heart and our mind and our hand, our action. And we write it on mezuzahs, on the scroll, we write it on mezuzahs, we put it on the doorpost of your home, and the gates of your town, the gates of your courtyard, all the gates of your city, all the gates. So this readiness to die for Hashem, to martyr ourselves for Hashem, this is key, this is critical, this is essential, this is the foundation of our Yiddishkeit. This is what defines us as Jews. This is what makes us a holy people. This is why we're a chosen people, because we have that level of dedication, devotion, and commitment, and we inherit it, and every Jew has it equally. And this is essential, even though no one is threatening us, thank God. There's no order de phase today, no one is holding a gun to our head, no one is stopping a Jew from worshiping and from serving Hashem freely. There isn't a Jew in the world today alive who's under subjugation, thank God. It's been a long time since every Jew in the world is totally free to live as he pleases. No one is stopping you from putting on tefillin, and no one is stopping you from putting up a mezuzah, and no one is stopping you from keeping kosher, and no one is stopping you from studying Torah, from keeping Shabbat. You can do everything. We're totally free. So why do we have to mention the Shema and our readiness to die? If, God forbid, push comes to shove, we're ready to give up our life. Thank God we don't have to have these choices. We're not facing a Stalin today. So why is it so critical and essential every day when we start the morning? And everything that we said till now is a build-up to the Shema Yisrael, the Akedah, and then the Shema Yisrael, the ultimate, our readiness to sacrifice ourselves, just like Avraham was ready to sacrifice for Hashem. Our total dedication for Hashem. Why is that so critical? You know, in times of emergency, okay, you can understand when there's an emergency, you have to be ready for war, you have to be ready to fight, you have to encourage heroism, you have to encourage all those qualities of heroism. You know, you're living life at the edge, your life is on the line, you're ready to make the ultimate sacrifice. You're living in luxury, you're living in comfort. Why talk about martyring yourself, loving Hashem, you're ready to die for Hashem? Why are you talking about dying? No one's asking anyone to die. And the answer is, you're right. We're not asking anyone to die. It's about life. It's not about dying. If you're ready to die for Hashem, surely you're ready to live for Hashem. It's a much smaller sacrifice. If you're ready to make the ultimate sacrifice for Hashem, give up your whole being, your ego, your whole existence, surely to give up, to inconvenience ourselves, or to give up, to sacrifice a temptation. Maybe we're tempted to eat not kosher food. To give that up for Hashem. If you're ready to die for Hashem, surely you're ready to live for Hashem. No, Hashem is not asking us to die. V'chai behem, Judaism is a way of life. It's a Torah of life. It's about living. It's not about dying. But it's just highlighting the point. That if you want to know what a person's essence is all about, it's only in moments of truth that you can really learn what a person is all about. In an extreme moment, in a moment of challenge, that's when you see a person's true colors. That's when you see what a person is really all about. So it's a way of really getting to know ourselves and discovering ourselves. Since in a moment of truth, every Jew is ready to give up his life for Hashem, meaning that Judaism is so important to you. Your relationship with Hashem is so alive. It's such a live wire. It's so real, relevant, current, vibrant, pulsating with life, right beneath the surface. We don't access it. But the reality is that that is my true reality. So therefore, once you recognize that, then the challenge is that I should live my life that way, every day of my life. So that's why right at the beginning of the day, right at the start of the day, we start with the Shema, that we're ready to give up our life. And when they first enacted the Shema, they had to give up their life because they were persecuted by the Persian emperor who refused to allow them to even say the Shema. So they had to smuggle it in. We had to say it early. So Jews were living in a time when they literally had to martyr themselves in order to continue and preserve their Yiddishkeit. But this remained with us, because it was a very short-lived. But just like the story of Hanukkah remains with us. Also, the Jews were ready to sacrifice their life, the Hashmonaim were ready to sacrifice their life for their Yiddishkeit, because the Greeks, the Hellenes, tried to Hellenize them, impose the Hellenized, the Greek way of life on the Jewish people, and forbade them from circumcision, and from Shabbos, and from Rosh Chodesh, and from celebrating Jewish life. And the Hashmonaim, the sons, were ready to sacrifice their life for their Yiddishkeit. And miraculously, they won. And the persecution was also short-lived. They recaptured and regained their... And they restored the temple. And that's Hanukkah. But even after that period, we still say the Shema. Because this is critical. This is... Before you start the day, before you take your first step, you have to know yourself. You have to know what your life is all about. You have to know how deeply your Yiddishkeit is. Our connection with Hashem, we're about to pray, we're about to spend time praying with Hashem. You have to realize how deep our connection with Hashem is. This is not rituals, customs. This is so real. Whether we acknowledge it or not, aware of it or not, are conscious of it or not, it doesn't change the reality right beneath the surface. You don't have to dig too deep. Lurking right beneath the surface. Every Jew has the neshama, that holy neshama that we inherited, that faith, that Jewish faith that we inherited from Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Any Jew is born to a Jewish mother. No matter where you are in life, no matter where you live in the world, no matter what circumstances you find yourself, every Jew equally has this 100%, from the simplest to the greatest, has this readiness to sacrifice his life for Hashem. Hashem means everything to us. Hashem is my life, Hashem is my core, Hashem is my essence, this is my center, this is what I live for, this is what my reality is. That's the purpose of my life, that's the meaning of my life, that's what it's all about. And therefore I express it, if you're in touch with it. The challenge is to say the Shema Yisrael, to awaken this faith, and to express it by lovingly doing Jewish, doing godly things, called mitzvot, doing Jewish, speaking Jewish, thinking Jewish, 24/7. And yes, it's a sacrifice. It's not easy. It's not a walk in the park. Doing the right thing and living a wholesome, meaningful life takes a lot of discipline. You want to eat junk food and live a life, junk lifestyle? That's easy. That comes easy. That's natural. It doesn't take any effort. But if you want to live a healthy life and a wholesome life, it's going to take a lot of discipline. You have to discipline what you eat and how much you eat, and you have to exercise. It's counterintuitive. It's not something you naturally enjoy. That junk food is talking to me. You have to have inner self-discipline, inner resolve. It takes strength and courage and character and determination. It's not a walk in the park. Anything worthwhile and meaningful is not a walk in the park. Anything of value, you want to develop a talent that you have, you know how much work and effort you have to invest. Nothing is a walk in the park. Nothing is instant. Even instant coffee is not instant. You know how much work and effort have to go? A piece of bread, you know how much work and effort have to go in until you get a slice of bread? Nothing is a walk in the park. We're not looking for a walk in the park. We're looking for value. But when you zero in and you focus on that value and you realize what's the value, you have to sum up what's the value. What's the essence of the Jew? What's the Jew within the Jew? What's the value? You have to strip away all the externals and get to the core. In a moment of challenge, then you have to get to the essence. You have to strip away all the externals and you have to get straight to the point. And that's what you build on. That's what it's all about. So here we're zeroing in and focusing in on the value. What is the value? What is the essence of the Jew? What is this wealth, this inheritance, this neshama, this faith that we inherited that makes us Jewish, which is the foundation of our life and the cornerstone of my day, a new life. Every day is a new life of my world. It's the Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. It's the ultimate affirmation of faith, the ultimate truth and reality. There is no other reality but Hashem. And therefore, once you have that clarity, then I can build my whole life on that. My whole day is an expression of I love Hashem with all my heart and all my soul and all my being. By doing godly activities day in and day out, all day. Doing Jewish, speaking Jewish, and thinking Jewish. So this whole introduction to our day, introduction to our prayer, this is fundamental. This is the foundation, the platform, the foundation you're going to build your whole day, your whole life on. But if the essence, if you don't have the clarity about the essence, then you can't even begin. And then we continue, after the Shema, the first paragraph of the Shema, we highlight to what extent the Shema Yisrael is not just a belief that there's one God, Hashem Echad, is only one God and not two gods. It's not even an affirmation that we believe that God runs this world. There's only one God, there's only one power. And God not only creates the world, but God actually runs the world, is in charge of the world, is engaged in the world, involved in the world, and runs the world. Nothing happens in the world without Hashem. It's much deeper than that. And that's what we say in the top of page 17. Atahu Achalei Nivra'ilam. Atahu Misha Nivra'ilam. You are the same before the world was created. You are the same after the world was created. Now, in the earlier generations, they had a different version. They would say, Atahu Achaloi Barasa, Atahu Misha Barasa. And it's two different things. We're saying that the two different versions, the accepted version that we say today is the way we just read. Atahu Achaloi Nivra'ilam. Barasa means Hashem creates, as if He's engaged in creation. Like when we're engaged in a project, you're engaged in teaching. So you're engaged, you're involved. You're estimating the student, and what are you going to say, and how are you going to say it, and while you're teaching, you're focused, and so you're engaged. Nivra ila means almost like something happens automatically. It's like you're not engaged. For example, the sun gives off light. The sun is not engaged in giving off light. It's not that the sun is contemplating and figuring out, I have to give off light. The sun is just being itself. It gives off light automatically. It doesn't even think about the effect. It gives off light equally in a garbage dump or if it's a palace. The sun is being itself. The light happens automatically, whatever the light does. If the light will heat, fine. If the light will melt, fine. If the light will harden, fine. The light is not thinking about its effect. It's not even thinking about you. You don't even exist to the light, the sun. To the sun, you don't even exist. The sun is just being itself. It gives off light, and whatever the effect of the light, that's fine. Mazel tov. He's not engaged. The sun is not engaged in giving off light and any effect that the light has. Versus a teacher and a student, the teacher is engaged. The teacher doesn't just automatically sit and the student learns. The teacher has to think what he's going to teach, how he's going to teach, how will the student be able to digest this concept. He has to bring it down and clarify the concept. And while he's teaching, he has to look in the eyes of the student to make sure the student is getting what he's teaching and truly understands what he's teaching. So he's totally engaged, and he's occupied and engaged, and he's affected by it. The teacher is changed by that experience, because the teacher has to put himself into the shoes of the student. He has to talk to the student. He has to be on the same wavelength as the student. He has to make sure afterwards the student truly absorbed it. So the whole process affects the teacher. While the sun is not affected by the light. There is light. There isn't light. It's a cloudy day. There is no effect of light. It doesn't matter to the sun. It doesn't add anything. It doesn't take away from the sun. And that's the difference between these two versions. The Virgin is Atu Achle Barasa, you were before you created the world. So we're saying that although Hashem creates the world, and therefore you may think to yourself, just like a teacher and the student, it has to change Hashem, it has to affect Hashem. So we say, as it says in the verse, in the prophet, Ani Hashem lo ishanisi. Hashem says, I have not changed. In other words, I am not affected, even though I'm creating, Hashem says, even though I'm creating the world. But nevertheless, Hashem is different. Unlike the teacher and the student, who's affected by this whole process, Hashem remains unaffected. Because Hashem creates the world, but it remains unaffected. It's like the light of this in relation to the sun. So the sun is not affected by the light. So he's not affected by the fact that he's creating the world. He's creating the world, sustaining the world, guiding the world, and yet he remains completely unaffected. Hashem remains holy, transcendent, unaffected. But you still can't say that there hasn't been a change before or after. Before, all you had was the sun. Now I have a light. The sun and the light. Before, there was no world. Now there is a world. Hashem creates a world. So yes, creation doesn't change Hashem, doesn't affect Hashem. Hashem remains transcendent. Fine. But you can't say that there hasn't been any change at all. And that's what we're saying in our version. We're saying much more than that. Because creation itself, he says, you don't have to say that it didn't change Hashem. Because Atu Shenivra Olam, it's as if creation happens on its own. Because it's like the light of the sun, it doesn't even affect the sun. So we understand that all of creation is like the light, which doesn't affect Hashem. So Hashem creates the whole universe and this whole teeming universe, universes and infinite levels and layers. And yet, it's almost like Nivra. It happens on its own. It's almost like it happens on its own in relation to Hashem. It's like the light of the sun doesn't affect and doesn't change the sun. So too, we understand that creation doesn't affect Hashem, doesn't change Hashem. Here, he's addressing a deeper aspect. What about the fact that before there was no world, and now there is a world? Yes, it happened on its own. It appears as if it almost happened on its own. Because Hashem is not affected by the world. He's not changed by the world. So it's almost like the sun giving off light and it doesn't affect the sun. Fine. But you can't say that Hashem, nothing changed. Before he created the world, Hashem was alone. There was no world. Now there's Hashem and a world. So something did change. So that's what he's saying, no. Hashem Echad means Hashem is one. He spells it out. You know what it means, Hashem Echad? That nothing changed. Just like Hashem was alone before he created the world, even while he's creating the world, during creation, Hashem remains Echad alone. Nothing else exists. Atuhu, Atchanivra Elam, you are the same, just like you were before you created the world. You were alone. There was nothing else. There is nothing else. All there is Hashem. So Atahu, you're exactly the same way, Misha Nivra Elam. Now we can understand why we only say it today. In the olden days, they had a different version. Because before the Baal Shem Tov came along and taught us that Hashem Echad means, in the deepest sense, that there is no ego, there is no I, there is no reality. All there is Hashem. There is nothing else besides Hashem. Not only is there only one God and Hashem is the only power, or Hashem is unified, as the Rambam says. But Hashem Echad means nothing else exists. All there is Hashem. Which is a revolution of Chassidus, of the Baal Shem Tov. And Baal Shem Tov publicized it. And Hashem wanted, Hashem sent the neshama of the Baal Shem Tov at that time to reveal this truth, this deepest truth, to prepare us and prepare the world for the ultimate, for the coming of Mashiach, for the ultimate revelation of this truth, that there is no other reality but Hashem, and the world will be flooded with the knowledge of Hashem and the realization there is no ego, there is no I, all there is Hashem. So now the prevalent nusach is Atu Achle Nivra Elam, not Atu Achle Baras. We don't have to come and say that Hashem remains unaffected by creation. That's a given. That we know already. By saying Atu Achle Nivra, the world is almost as if it's created on its own. Meaning, of course, the world is not created on its own. Of course, Hashem creates it. But it's almost as if, because it has no effect on Hashem. But we're saying is something much deeper. That even that change that you think, before Hashem created the world, all there was Hashem. Now there's Hashem in the world. So he says, no, there is no world. All there is Hashem. Hashem remains alone, just like he created before. How is that possible? How could you say the world is not an illusion? It says clearly in the Torah, Bereishis bara Elokim, Hashem created the world. God created the world. And he gave us a Torah to fulfill in this world. If the world doesn't exist, then the whole Torah is an illusion. No, the world is real. Hashem created the world and he gave us a Torah. We have a mission to transform this world and make it into a Torah world. So the world is real. So how could you say nothing changed? Before Hashem created the world, all Hashem was alone. Hashem Echad, in the literal sense, he was alone. He was Yachid, he was all alone. There was nothing else. Now there's Hashem in the world. And that's what we learn in Tanya. TanyaClass.com, the first part of Tanya, chapter 20, 21, 22, and chapter 33, that, and also in Shari Yechid V'Emunah, the second part of the Tanya and the later chapters there, that from our perspective, there's a light and there's a sun. The light is totally dependent on the sun, but there's a light and there's a sun. The light knows it has no independent existence without the sun. But the light is a dependent existence, a dependent entity that's outside of the sun. So you do have the sun and the light. The sun is not alone from the light's perspective. But from the sun's perspective, there is no light. Light doesn't mean anything. To the sun, the light is contained within the sun. All there is the sun. There is nothing else. The light doesn't add anything to the sun. It's nothing. It's completely insignificant. Everything the light has is from the sun. And from the sun's point of view, the light is nothing. It doesn't add anything. It doesn't mean anything. It's a totally meaningless, as Alter Rebbe uses the other analogy. A person speaks. You say a word. Obviously, words come from within you. You spoke the word. The words were there before you spoke. And you produced these words. They didn't come from thin air. What's the word in comparison to the person who's speaking the word? It's not like you have the person and I added a word. Now I have a person and a word. The word comes from within you, but it's in a state of non-being and non-existence. Especially before you even spoke the word, even before you thought the word. The words are there, but what words? You can't even find it. You love in words, you love in French or in English. Love is beyond words. 2 + 2 = 4 is beyond words, beyond culture, beyond language. Your subconscious is totally beyond words. So the words are there in your soul, but I can't even find it. It doesn't exist. What do you mean it doesn't? It's not that it's an illusion. It doesn't mean anything. It doesn't add anything. It's in a state of non-being and non-existence. So our true state, the true state of the world, the true state of everything that exists, is a state of non-being and non-existence where it's absolutely unified within the absolute unity of Hashem. There is nothing else. All there is Hashem. So our whole being and existence is within Hashem. There's nothing else. All there is Hashem. That's the deepest level of Achdus Hashem, the unity of Hashem.